You know, I really, really want to love WWE. Like, I really do. Like, I grew up on WWE. It was my shit. Obviously, later on, when I got into my, you know, early 20s and all that, I became a WCW fan. But for the most part, when I was a kid, WWE was the show. That was wrestling. I didn't know about territories and NWA and all that other shit. I just knew about Hulk Hogan and Ultimate Warrior and Macho Man and, you know, Roddy Piper and Ricky Steamboat and Tito Santana and all these guys who I knew from WWE. And that's where I built my love of wrestling. So, you know, when I get a pay-per-view like this, and again, this pay-per-view wasn't all bad. Like, it really wasn't. There were some really good matches on the show. But when you follow something for so long, you know, you tend to know the ins and outs of these things. So I've been following wrestling for like 30 years, probably longer. And no, I'm not a professional wrestler. No, I'm not a wrestling booker. But I know of these things. So, you know, everybody plays fantasy GM, whether if they, you know, enjoy NBA or NFL. Everybody wants certain players on their team. You know, they do their own fantasy booking in their head about who they can draft and who they can trade for. So you do that with anything you like. And for me, having watching something for 30 years and knowing who all these wrestlers like are, especially in the age of social media, where they've been and what they've done and who they've wrestled and who they admire, and you know, you get a sense in your head of like, okay, I think, you know, it would be really cool to see this, it would be really cool to see that. My point in saying all this is that I don't think it's that hard to provide a quality product with the roster that you do have. Mind you, they've released a shitload of people, but I mean, Edge, Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns, Shinsuke, Apollo, Big E, Becky, Bianca, Sasha, Carmella, Asuka, Rhea, Charlotte. You have a shitload of talented people on this roster. A shitload. You might not have as many as you had a few months ago, but you got a lot. And I just, sometimes when I see shows like this, I don't understand why WWE continues to shoot themselves in their foot. They cut off their nose to spite their face all the time. And I can't understand why they do it. What I really don't understand are the people who continue to give them a pass for shit like this. The people who continue to give them a pass for shit like what happened tonight with Sasha Banks and Bianca. I don't understand the people who make excuses for the comedy bullshit that we saw on this pay-per-view. Why did we need to have Miz and Morrison out there getting sprayed with water in front of 47,000 people, or however many it was? Because they reported 51, but that's bullshit. It wasn't 51,000. It was more like 46, supposedly. I wasn't there doing head counts, but from the information that I have, that was the accurate count. Why would you need to have that water segment there? Why, on a flagship pay-per-view, do you have your Intercontinental Champion, one of the most over guys in your company, along with Rick Boogs, who, as silly as he is super fucking over because of the guitar thing that he's doing with Shinsuke? Why would you have one of your most over acts not have a match? Why would you have them just come out and dance and prance and that's it? I don't understand. Very easy to make a match. Very easy to make an intercontinental match. Super easy. You could have even done a rematch with Apollo on the pre-show would have been better than that. It would have been more acceptable. I wouldn't have liked it because I don't want to see the Intercontinental title on a pre-show. But it would have been a lot better than what they did. For a weekend where we saw the return of CM Punk after 7 years on another program, getting possibly one of the biggest pops that has ever been had. It's probably top five. I've been playing it over and over again. I even put on my studio headphones so I could hear like the actual sound, you know, because you watch these things on your tablet, on your phone speaker, and you don't really get the gist of the impact of that kind of sound. Put your headphones on and watch that a few times and you'll understand the magnitude of that return. Why on a weekend where your competition does something like that, where they basically pulled the rug out from under you, because I know that WWE's been trying to get CM Punk back for a while and he just hasn't wanted to go back there. Why would you, as a company, whether you see them as competition or not, they're competition. Ric Flair, although he's not in AEW, but he did appear with an AEW star in another promotion, was trending for 24 straight hours after that. CM Punk is still trending. That shit's important. It's the age of social media. Why would you as a company see that and not put a little more effort into what you have? Excuse me. And again, very simple. They didn't need to have Becky Lynch on this show. They really didn't. After the show was over and I saw Brock Lesnar, I was like, okay, this is dumb. Like, why did you have Becky Lynch out here when you had Brock Lesnar in your back pocket? You didn't need Becky Lynch. You really didn't. You could have saved that for your draft or, you know, your WrestleManias, or even be pre-WrestleMania. You could have built something up like in a month or two leading into WrestleMania. You didn't need her on this show. It was a desperation move. I don't care what anyone else says. It was a desperation move reacting to what happened. But they did it in a fucked up way. They couldn't just do it, you know. Anyone with a brain in their head, I think, could have booked that entire segment in a different way. And it would have been better than what we got. What we got was bullshit. What we got was a load of bullshit. Bianca did not deserve that shit. And again, I don't pretend to understand what goes on inside the inner workings of WWE with the talent, with the writers, with the, you know. I don't know. I don't know how they come up with these things. I don't know how they bring it to the talent. I don't know if they just tell them, listen, this is what you're doing. That's it. This is what you're doing, so go out and do it. I don't know if that's how it is. But I feel bad for her. I feel bad for her fans. Because Bianca has a very large fan base. And they feel slighted right now. And I don't blame them. Because it was bullshit. So, you know, when you get a pay-per-view like this, this is supposed to be one of their flagship shows. And when they don't deliver, it's just, it's disappointing is not the word. It's more like, it's almost like deflating. Because you had such an expectation of what you were going to get. And again, this wasn't a terrible show. It really wasn't. But it just has a stink on it now. And again, going off of what happened earlier in the week, it's just, and then again, the NXT show that preceded it just blew it away. So again, I love this company. I want to love them, better said. I don't know how much longer really I can deal with this shit. When I'm getting so much enjoyment out of the other product, it just makes me not care about this dumb shit. But here I am anyway with a recap of SummerSlam 2021 from Allegiant Stadium. Again, they announced it was 51,000 crowd attendance. It was more like 46 or 47, because you know how they like to embellish these things. And the best part about that is that they bring out this announcer in the middle of the show to announce, we have a record crowd of 51,200 and whatever number it was. And then they pan the camera right to a section filled with empty seats. Fucking classic WWE. But this show had a kickoff match, and the kickoff match was Big E versus Baron Corbin for the love of the Money in the Bank briefcase. So we got to see Big E, and he came out on the pre-show and was never heard from again. Big E came out, had this match, and they made no mention of him possibly cashing in or doing anything or anything of that sort. So, start of the match, Big E was tossing Corbin around with some big suplexes. Corbin was able to roll out of the way of a big splash on the apron while yelling that the Money in the Bank briefcase belonged to him because he stole it. Big E put on a stretch muffler submission. Baron broke it with a rope break. Corbin hits a deep six for a near fall, and Corbin then grabbed the briefcase and tried to run until Big E ran around the ring and body checked Corbin into the guardrail. Throws him back in the ring, spears him back out of the ring, before throwing him back in the ring, hitting him with a big ending for the win. Perfectly fine kickoff match. I mean, it's a kickoff match. You know, not expecting anything incredible out of it. But hopefully Big E's done with this, because it's stupid. I do enjoy basic ass, bum ass Baron Corbin, but just not at the expense of Big E and the briefcase. They need to take Big E and put him in the main event picture, not having him run around with this comedy bullshit and having to deal with Baron Corbin's bum ass. Somebody stole his briefcase. No, this is the fucking Money in the Bank briefcase. It's going to cash in for a title shot. Let's take this a little more seriously. So Big E wins. I give this match 3 out of 5. It was entertaining. It was just basically a SmackDown match. It wasn't too long. So before I kick into the big show, I'm just going to let you guys know, I did rank each one of these matches, and I ranked them out of a 5 scale. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So, again, if I give something 5 out of 5, it's not that I think it's a perfect, incredible match. It's just, it was a very enjoyable, good match. It's a 5. Like, great match, good match, great match. Is getting a, you know, is a 5. It's not like I'm giving it a 5 because it's 5 stars, greatest match ever. That's not what this is. It's just out of enjoyment for the scale of a WWE pay-per-view. So reel your expectations back a little bit. And, you know, when you hear these ratings, don't lose your mind. So, again, and also before we get started here, I just want you to know I am not covering the guest appearances or the comedy bullshit with Miz and Morrison during this review. I'm not going to be going over that. I don't think you need me to tell you that this moist shit is not fun. It sucks a bag of dicks. Using terms like dry bronies and splashmatics, it doesn't do much for me. You know, I go fuck your mother. I'm not here to review any of that bullshit. So I'm not going to bother with that. I'm just going to focus on the matches, if you don't mind, because I don't feel like yelling or getting animated. My voice is already acting weird for whatever reason. It's like I have dry mouth all of a sudden when I need to talk. So with that being said, the first match was the Raw Tag Team Championship. AJ Styles and Omos, the champions, versus RK-Bro. Starting out, almost dominated early in the match, taking it right to Riddle before tagging out to AJ. so that AJ could continue kicking Riddle's ass. Riddle eventually made the hot tag to Randy, who tossed Styles around the ring while getting several shots in at Almost, who was standing on the apron, because that's what he does, he just stands there. Riddle took out Almost on the outside, driving him into the ring post before Styles dropped him with a moonsault reverse DDT. Listen, that man is incredible. That was a fucking crazy move. I don't think I've seen that too many times. So shout out to AJ Styles. That was fucking bonkers. That move led to a final fury between Orton and Styles that ended when Orton hit him with the RKO for the win. I mean, the best thing I can say about this match is that the placement of it was good. It was a good way to start the pay-per-view off. You know, RK-Bro is pretty over. Getting them a title win on the pay-per-view opener, it helps the crowd get hyped up. The problem here is that this is basically a Raw match. And it's a Raw match that we've seen for weeks already. Another thing about this is that Almost is basically pointless. Like, what is his purpose exactly? He's big and scary. That's it. Because he literally does nothing. He has zero personality. He emotes like a rock. I don't get it. I don't understand why he's being, like, pushed. I get it. He's huge. If he could actually, like, somewhat wrestle, he'd be dope. But he just stands there and does nothing. I don't understand it. I don't get it. They need to get AJ away from this. AJ doesn't have many years left in this industry. So, you know, maybe we can get him feuding with some people who can actually do something with him. Because this is a waste of time. But as far as the match goes, I give it a 3 out of 5. Good opener. Quick. You know, they kept Almost out of the action. So he didn't do anything horrible. 3 out of 5. Next up, we have Alexa Bliss versus Eva Marie. I was not a big fan of this match. Not at all. The best thing I can say about this is that there was no magic bullshit. So starting off, Bliss easily turned aside every attempt at offense from Eva Marie. Marie eventually used the hair pull to take Bliss down. And then she went to the corner and grabbed Lily the doll. Oh my god. She starts slapping the doll. She held the doll up in the air, yelled at it, slapped it around a couple times. And then Alexa Bliss just stood there in awe of this. And Eva Marie turned around and slaps Alexa Bliss with the fucking doll. Not a disqualification because I guess it's a doll? I don't know. This led to Bliss screaming and unleashing a fury of offense for a near fall. Marie rolled out of the way of Twisted Bliss moments later, rolling her up for a two count. And then mercifully, Alexa Bliss hit a DDT for the win. Thank God, because this match shouldn't have gone longer than 1 minute. But unfortunately, it did. But thankfully, it wasn't too long. After the match, Doudrop grabs the mic to announce that Eva Marie was the loser of this match. And was kind of happy about that because I'd like to see Doudrop do more. But as expected, this was the worst thing on the show. Eva Marie is the female version of Almost, meaning she does absolutely nothing. Her tie-ups looked atrocious. You have to really suck at wrestling to make a collar-elbow tie-up look bad. Again, the one positive for me was that there wasn't any magic bullshit, and it was nice to see Doudrop shit on Eva. Hopefully she can, you know, do her own stuff, because she's actually really good. And I'd like to see her, you know, go on her own singles run. She doesn't need Eva Marie. Alexa Bliss defeats Eva Marie by pinfall. I give this match a 1 out of 5. Next up, we had the United States Championship match. Sheamus the champion versus Damian Priest. This was a very good match. This was a very good, very enjoyable match. Sheamus got off to a hot start before Priest stormed back with a Falcon Arrow. There was a scary moment here for Damian as he knocked Sheamus to the floor. And he hit a flipping dive over the top rope, but he came up short and crashed hard onto the floor on his back. That looked like it fucking hurt. The match slowed down a little bit after that. Sheamus continued to attack Priest's back until he was able to fight back, although slower than normal. Priest grabbed Sheamus by the throat as he was on the top rope, but Sheamus jumped to the floor, reversed it, and got a near fall. Priest hits South of Heaven for another near fall, and the finish sees Priest being locked up in a heel hook when he rips off Sheamus' mask and unloaded with strikes to the face, leading to the Reckoning for the win. That early dive bump was pretty scary, but Priest managed to get his wits back under him as the match went on. Priest and Sheamus have pretty good chemistry. The match was very enjoyable. I liked it a lot. Damian Priest is easily one of my favorites on the roster. I've made no secret about that. I see big things for him in the future. He's going to have to cut down on the divey bullshit because he's too big and lanky to be doing that all the time. But I think he's been booked great so far. You know, he was out there after the Bad Bunny thing. He was gone for a couple weeks, but they brought him back. They put him right back into a title contention, you know, high mid card, which is where he belongs. Right now, he's not, you know, he's not ready for the main event yet, but I think he's going to get there. But again, this match was very enjoyable. I liked it a lot. It was one of my favorites on the card. Damian Priest defeats Sheamus to become the United States champion. I gave it 4 out of 5. Next up, we had the SmackDown Tag Team Champions going up against the Mysterios. That would be the Usos. I kind of messed that up there, but the Usos versus the Mysterios for the SmackDown Tag Team Champions. Ships. Wow, I can't talk today. They had a nice sequence to start when Rey Mysterio quickly took Jimmy to the ropes and nearly hit a 619, but he had to settle for taking to both Usos to the outside and then hitting a baseball slide splash to get the match started off. It's pretty cool. The Usos isolate Dominic and kept Rey out of the ring. Jay continued to tell Dominic to crawl to his father to make the tag, but kept cutting him off before he could do it. Dominic was able to hit a superplex reversal and make the hot tag, allowing Rey to briefly run both Usos before getting super kicked into oblivion. Jay countered Rey with a springboard and another super kick, and Uso splashed for a 2 count. Jimmy tried to follow his brother into the top rope, but missed a splash. Rey tried to hit a frog splash, but Jimmy got to his knees up, and then the Usos hit tandem super kicks on Jay for one final Uso splash for the win. I mean, it was a pretty predictable match. It was enjoyable, but this is, again, I'm pretty sure we got this match 3 weeks ago on SmackDown for free. So, you know, it was enjoyable, but the outcome was never really in question. Rey is still really having to carry the workload here for Dominic, because Dominic's not quite there yet, but he's getting there. But it was still a perfectly fine match. It was enjoyable. Nothing really bad about it. It wasn't too long either, so that's a good thing. The Usos defeat the Mysterios via pinfall to retain the titles. 3 out of 5 for me. Next up, we had the SmackDown Women's Championship match. And I have it labeled here, Bianca Belair versus Becky Lynch, because the match that was supposed to happen, the match that was hyped up, didn't happen. And this is where the fuckery began. So after the whole, which I said I wasn't going to cover, but after Shinsuke and Boogs were done dancing around the announce table, they played a full video package for Bianca Belair versus Sasha Banks. The same video package that they've played at the beginning of this pay-per-view. The same video package they play on SmackDown multiple times. They played it here again because they love their video packages. So Sasha Banks' music hits and Bianca walks out to Sasha's music, which is the fuck? I mean, usually, first of all, why did they do that? And secondly, usually the champion comes out second, the challenger comes out first. So why not just play Bianca's music and let her come? I don't understand what was going on there. The champion coming out first should already be a red flag for you, as they always come out second. Like, the only time a champion comes out first is if, like, the challenger is doing some kind of incredible over-the-top entrance or something. And even that's only happened a handful of times. So Bianca's in the ring, and it was announced that Banks was not able to compete tonight. to which the crowd very much did not like. They didn't like that at all. They start booing these people out of the fucking building. And then they say that tonight she's going to face Carmella. Why Carmella? Because the WWE hates his fans. That's fucking why. Carmella was just beaten the night before on SmackDown clean in under 3 minutes by Bianca in the middle of the ring. So why Carmella? Just because they hate you, that's why. So Carmella gets in the ring, and Bianca, who's trying to make the best of this shit situation, goes, all right, fuck it, let's go. You know, I'll give you a shot. She starts jumping up and down, getting herself hype. And as the match is about to start, Becky Lynch's music hit and the crowd went absolutely apeshit. Like, they went crazy. I jumped, I popped, everybody popped, we were all popping. Becky Lynch is back. The man has returned. So Lynch does her usual entrance shit, comes down the ramp, she's all excited, she's got her new shirt on. She hits the ring and quickly takes out Carmella. She rolls Carmella outside. She looks at Bianca and she says, I'll be right back. And she goes to the outside. She grabs Carmella and throws her into the steps. Now, let me just say, if you watch this back, Carmella wanted absolutely nothing to do with this segment. Like, you could see her disdain for this angle on her face. And I actually felt a little bad for her because she was basically brought out here for nothing. Becky rolls back into the ring, and she throws down a challenge to Belair for the title. She says to her, how about you and the man blow the roof off this joint? Much to the delight of the crowd and myself. Because you know what? It's cool. She's back, making a challenge. Let's do this. And this was a challenge that Belair quickly accepted. Now, let me stop here for a second. This is where my biggest gripe for the show lies. WWE should 100% be lambasted for this bullshit bait and switch. They absolutely knew something was going on with Sasha because they pulled the two of them off of house shows for the last 2 weeks. There haven't been any reports on whether it's an injury or if it's COVID or whatever, anything. I don't know. No reports about anything, what's going on with Sasha. Just, she's not cleared. That's it. That's the most you get out of this company. And honestly, it's none of our business. Like, it really isn't. We don't really need to know what's going on with her. Like, it might be something personal. She just, you know what I'm saying? You never know. But for WWE to continue to promote this match on SummerSlam all the way till right up to the beginning of the match, showing a fucking 5-minute video package hyping up the match, it's unacceptable. Like, in no world should anyone be defending this. If something happened to Sasha like the day of, like, let's just use COVID as an example, because honestly, COVID is like the get out of jail free card. If you have something going on with your roster, you could just be like, hey, COVID protocol. And everybody's just kind of like, oh yeah, you know, that sucks, but you know, we get it. It's fucking COVID. COVID sucks. Like, if something happened to her the day of the event and they couldn't use her, if she twisted her ankle, if she, you know, found out that morning that she's pregnant or whatever, anything, I could understand. Like, if it's day of and then on the pre-show they go, hey, you know, Sasha Banks is, you know, not medically clear to wrestle tonight. So, you know, they could at least build up something in the pre-show and get people ready and then make that announcement instead of just acting like everything's okay till right before the match. And then it's like, ah, we'll just, you know, we'll throw Carmella out there and we'll bring Becky back and they won't care because they're dumb. You know, okay. Nobody's going to care. Like, that's bullshit. I mean, I could understand if it was like something that happened to her like right before the show, but they knew about this shit for 8 days. And they still led people to believe this match was happening. Why did they do that? Because WWE hates their fans. They love your money, but they hate you. Always. Remember. Always remember that. They hate you. That's why they do these things. Always remember that. So fine, you know what? The situation sucks a dick, but guess what? Becky's back. She made a challenge to Bianca, and Bianca's more than ready. So let's have us a match. Let's have us a nice 8 to 10 minute kick-ass match. You know, see where it goes. Let's see what happens. And I only say that because Lynch is, you know, she's just coming back. She just had a baby. She's, you know, I know she's been training, but it's going to be her first match back. You're not expecting her to go out there and have a fucking 18 minute match. But I think she could do 8 to 10 minutes with Bianca. You know, maybe closer to 8 minutes than 10. But, you know, doesn't have to be long, but just something. You figure they'll go out there, they have a quick little match, see what happens. I'm so annoyed. You know, I love Becky Lynch. I'm a big fan. So I was actually kind of excited. With everything else aside, I was just kind of like, okay, this mostly sucks, but let's see what happens. So back to the ring. Bianca's like, okay, yeah, hell yeah. The man, the EST, let's go. Let's do this. She accepts. The ref is like, are you sure? She said yes. She starts bouncing up and down. She starts warming up to get ready. Becky's like, fuck yeah, let's do this. She goes to the crowd. She gets all hyped up. They're about to lock up. And then Becky extends her hand out. So Bianca kind of hesitates, but then she goes to shake her hand. And then Becky delivered a forearm to Bianca in the mouth, and she hit her with a Uranagi suplex, or the woman's rock bottom, or the man slam, or whatever the fuck it's called, for the 1-2-3 to score the pinfall in 20 seconds. She beat Bianca Belair in 20 seconds and is now the new SmackDown Women's Champion. You know, the disappointment at Banks not being there was pretty apparent when they made that announcement. You could see the crowd reaction. It was like a mix of confusion and disgust and, you know, mostly confusion. Or you know, the disgust maybe was the last part was for me. But the crowd definitely was not happy about that shit. And then Becky's music hit and everybody forgot about that shit. Everybody was up. Everybody was all the way fucking up. They were hype, you know. It was just let's go. Everybody was ready to fucking rock and roll. And all that hype got completely squandered when Lynch did the shit that she did and won the belt. Bianca deserved so much better than this. This was like, I don't get why. I just don't understand. And I'll play Booker a little later after I get through all this bullshit. But I don't like, why did you need to put the belt on Becky? You didn't, she's super over. Like, she doesn't even need a belt. Why say you're going to have a match and then not have a match? Why have Carmella out there with the myriad of other women on the roster? Like, what? It was so confusing. It was like, it's literally a shit sandwich. Like, this match was like the hardest thing for me to grade because, like, I wanted to give it, like, at least, like, 2 stars because of the return, but because that was pretty huge. But, like, honestly, I can't, with all the other shit around it, I just couldn't. So, Becky Lynch defeats Bianca Belair via pinfall to win the title. I gave this match a 1 out of 5. Next up, we had Drew McIntyre versus Jinder Mahal. This was another match that had absolutely no business being on this card. It's not that it was bad. It's just it was another match that we've seen on TV 1,000 times. And it progressed nothing. It advanced nothing. It accomplished nothing. It was just more of the same bullshit. The only thing it accomplished was getting Drew McIntyre on the pay-per-view. That's it. So early on, Drew goes for a claymore. Mahal rolls out of the ring. Mahal was able to beg off and take cover after a cheap shot. But McIntyre quickly regained control and hit a series of belly-to-bellies, tossing Mahal from corner to corner before hitting a Future Shock DDT. McIntyre then hit a claymore to finish the match. That literally was it. That was it. Veer and Shanky ran to the ring after the match to tend to their fallen ally. And as they got up to kind of man up and go beat up Drew. Drew goes to the corner and grabs his sword and chases them off. Attempted murder. That's called in some states, but in WWE it's okay. It's weird the shit that you can and cannot do in WWE. I saw a pay-per-view where Rhea Ripley was disqualified for hitting Charlotte with a piece of the announce table by accident. I saw a pay-per-view where, in this pay-per-view, where Eva Marie hit Alexa with a foreign object and was not disqualified. I know the match was over, but Drew should not be able to grab a sword and swing it at people. That should not be allowed. But, very quick win for Drew in a match that really didn't need to happen. No one was looking forward to this match. Nobody cared. I give it one extra credit point for being short. Drew McIntyre defeats Jinder Mahal via pinfall. 2 out of 5 stars. Next up is the Raw Women's Championship match. Nikki A.S.H. I keep trying to call her Nikki Ash, but that's not what they want you to call her. They want you to call her Nikki A.S.H. is the Raw Women's Champion. She was having a triple threat match with Charlotte Flair and Rhea Ripley. So I thought this was a very good match. I didn't agree with the outcome, but again, I'm not in charge of creative. So my pick was Rhea Ripley, but that's not what happened. But again, I thought this was a very good match. So right out of the gate, all three women traded offense early. Flair went for a top rope moonsault, but Ripley got her foot up to counter. Then she hit Nikki with the Riptide real early. Things broke down into a stretch with Ripley and Flair battling one-on-one while Nikki was knocked out of the ring. After Flair took Ripley out with a big boot, Nikki hit a big DDT for a near fall. As Ripley and Flair began to battle that out on the floor, Nikki came off the top rope with a crossbody on both women. That was pretty cool. That actually didn't look as terrible as the other crossbodies that she's done. Nikki actually got a lot of offense into this match. Big moves continued to flow from all three women before Flair hit a twisting moonsault from the top rope on the outside onto both women. This was fucking awesome. Flair really is one of the best on this roster. She's say what you want about, you know, opportunities and, you know, she's being pushed to a certain level. The reason she's pushed up into the main level is because she's main level shit. Charlotte Flair is awesome in the ring. Flair locked Ripley in the figure eight back inside the ring, but Nikki broke the hold by flipping off the top rope and using her ASH to land on Rhea. Nikki scored a near fall on Flair, but found herself locked in the figure 8 seconds later and was forced to tap out as Flair became a 13-time women's champion. Excuse me if that's incorrect, but I'm pretty sure it's 13. In my opinion, this was a real good match. Very good match. No rest holds. No, you know, no bullshit. Clean finish. All the women got a lot of good-looking offense in. But in the end, inevitability came crashing down on Nikki and Rhea as Charlotte is the new champion. So now I don't pretend to understand the ins and outs of WWE, but Charlotte was just champion like a month ago. She had the belt for one day before dropping it, and now they put it right back on her. So it's like, I thought it would be more interesting to have Rhea win the belt, you know, but, you know, the one thing I can say is that at least WWE and I have one thing in common, and that is the fact that we don't believe Nikki needed to be champion. I hope that gimmick comes to an end very soon, because it's fucking dumb. Or at least if they're going to continue it, just have her doing her comedy bullshit on the other side of the women's roster while the women can wrestle and challenge for the title on the upper echelon portion of that, you know, roster. I feel bad for saying that, but this whole superhero thing is not fucking working for me. So Charlotte Flair defeats Nikki A.S.H. and Rhea Ripley to win the title. I give this match 4 out of 5 stars. It was a pretty good match. Next up, we had Edge versus Seth Rollins. So To no one's surprise, at least not to me, this was the match of the night. Edge and Seth had a fucking fantastic back and forth contest with a great finish. Everything from the entrances to the ending for me was perfect. The great match. Edge's ring entrance was a throwback to his days in the Brood, rising up out of the stage surrounded by fire as the 90s music from the Brood played in the background, shaking the arena. I didn't know this was going to happen, but when I heard the beginning of the very distinctive theme that Brood song, and when I heard it, ding, 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 I was like, oh shit, then you see the Ring of Fire. And then the way they had the camera angle up, you knew he was going to come up out of the ground. I was hoping to see Gangrel. I knew I wasn't going to see Christian, but I was kind of hoping to see at least Gangrel in there with his goblet laughing and shit. Because that for me, when I hear that theme and I think of them coming up out of there, they were always laughing when they came up out of there. And it was just part of like that evil fucking vampire weirdo gimmick. It was just... he always came up and he was like laughing maniacally, and then he would drink out of his blood goblet and spit the blood and all that shit. They didn't have to do all that, but it would have been at least cool to see Gangrel in costume, because he's still out there doing his thing. He's still, you know, fanging and banging out there. So I would have liked to see that, but unfortunately no Gangrel. And start of the match, Rollins immediately started targeting Nedge's Eck. I want you all to remember that. I said Nedge's Eck instead of Edge's neck. Rollins immediately targeted Edge's neck before Edge bounced him from the ring. Rollins kept the pressure on, throwing Edge neck first into the ring post. And the ring steps. Rollins' attack was pretty focused, hitting strikes on the back of the neck, multiple neck breakers, in addition to an early attempt at a curb stomp. Rollins' domination continued for a very long stretch before he tried to set up for a superplex to the outside of the ring, only for Edge to hit the neck breaker from the top rope. Pretty cool. Edge hit an execution for a near fall as Rollins struggled to recover until he was able to counter Edge, going to the top rope for a superplex into a Falcon Arrow. I fucking love when he does that shit. Falcon Arrow rules. No one ever gets pinned by a Falcon Arrow, but that fucking shit always looks good. Both men ran through some of their greatest hits, including Rollins going for a pedigree, before Edge hit a fucking glam slam. Okay? Pretty cool. You hit Beth Phoenix's finisher. Rollins continued looking for opportunities to hit a curb stomp before Edge hit him with a spear through the ropes. Both men go crashing out to the floor. Back into the ring, Rollins countered a spear with a pedigree for a two count. Edge hit another spear in the middle of the ring, but Rollins was able to kick out before super kicking Edge's neck and running in for yet another attempt at a curb stomp. Edge caught Rollins' foot this time and turned it into his old educator submission. Haven't seen that in... when was the last time you seen that? Rollins was able to fight through that. And then Edge finally was able to get the win when he put a cross-face sleeper on after grabbing a handful of Seth's hair and slamming his face into the mat about 40 times. So he grabbed a handful of hair, slammed his face into the mat a bunch of times. And then he put him in like this cross-face sleeper, and Edge got him to tap out. So this was a great match. I know it was kind of summed up here, but if you want to go back and watch something from SummerSlam, definitely go back and watch this. If you only get to watch one of the matches, I would recommend this one, because this was pretty great. From start to finish, it was a clear story. You know, Rollins focusing on the neck and Edge running through all these classic moves and breaking out some old shit, and then going to the dark place to get the finish. Edge defeats Seth Rollins via submission. I give this 5 out of 5. I enjoyed that match very much. Next up, we had the WWE Championship. Bobby Lashley, the champion. The almighty Bobby Lashley. Versus Gorg. I say Gorg because something happened with the paneling over Goldberg's name. So the only letters that showed was the G-O on one side and the R-G on the other side. So it was like, here's Gorg. But Lashley versus Goldberg. So this was a big heaping pile of bullshit. This match sucked, and there was nothing really redeeming about it. And the worst part about it is that we're probably going to see more of this shit that's going to lead into another match. So this isn't over, unfortunately. The two men locked up collar and elbow, battling for position until having to break. Lashley bounced off the rope with a shoulder block, didn't budge. Goldberg came back with his own leaping shoulder block, knocked down Bobby. A few slams and a few clotheslines later, Lashley came back with clubbing blows to the back before trying to set up a jackhammer. It seems like Goldberg kind of fucked up whatever it is they were supposed to do here, because Bobby tried to put him in a jackhammer. He tried to get him up. He couldn't. Goldberg was locking the leg, trying to block the move. And then something was supposed to happen there, which didn't happen. And then Bobby literally just grabbed Goldberg and fucking flatlined him. So thank God that Goldberg was in there with a professional, because there was a few spots in here Goldberg fucked up and Lashley saved his ass. Lashley after that goes to the top rope, but was caught by Goldberg, who threw him across the ring like a fucking lawn dart. After that, MVP pulled Lashley out of the ring to help him avoid a spear. So now, let me stop here for a second. I really hope that Bobby Lashley, after this match in the back, gave Goldberg a good fucking talking to. Because in that spot that they just had, Goldberg almost killed Bobby. He picked him up. So Bobby's on the top rope, if you didn't see the match. Bobby's sitting on the top rope. Goldberg goes and grabs him. Kind of like a press slam. He just grabs him and he fucking throws him forward like a fucking hot potato. Bobby wasn't ready. He wasn't able to kick, so he couldn't rotate. Somehow, some way, because Bobby Lashley is some kind of super freak athlete, right before he hit the mat, he was able to rotate himself and flip so that he landed on the back of his shoulders. Instead of landing on his fucking collarbone, which he was going to end up landing right on. All that weight going at that speed, landing on your collarbone would not have been good. Goldberg has no business being in the ring. Sorry. I don't know what other evidence you need to see to understand that, but one of these days he's going to seriously end another career, just like he did to Bret Hart. This shit, like, Goldberg does not need to be in the ring. If he is, it needs to be, I don't know, again, I don't know the inner workings of this company. I don't know how they prepare their matches. I don't know if they practice or they get in a ring and they plan their shit out. I don't know. It seems like a lot of these guys just kind of go, hey, we're going to do this and that and that, and that's it. Like, because sometimes I see things and it just doesn't make sense. But Goldberg, we don't need to see any more of him. Unfortunately, we're going to. So back to the ring, Goldberg followed Lashley to the outside and hit a spear. Goldberg tried to hit another spear back inside the ring, but MVP hit him in the knee with the cane. Then Lashley chop blocked him. Lashley tried to put Goldberg in the hurt lock, and then decided, nah, gonna do another chop block. And after more attacking from Lashley, Goldberg was unable to get to his feet. He was clutching at his knee. And the referee called for the bell. They ended this big ballyhooed match with a fucking ref stoppage. An injury angle. After the match, MVP slid Lashley a steel chair, which Lashley used to continue attacking Goldberg's knee. And then when out of nowhere, a 15-year-old Gage Goldberg jumped up to the ring and leaped on Lashley's back and was trying to put him in a sleeper. And Lashley grabbed Gage and put him in the hurt lock. Threw him to the mat, kid was dead. He killed this kid. And then MVP grabbed the mic and said, listen, we couldn't have known that was Goldberg's son. Bobby just reacted. He didn't mean to do that to him. And then Goldberg, who was in pain in the corner, didn't realize what was going on. When he looked over and saw his son laying on the mat, he kind of limped over to him and kind of threw his body on top of his son and just looked at Bobby and was screaming, I'm going to kill you. At that point, Lashley and MVP took their leave. And look, I don't think it's any secret that we knew this match wasn't really going to be anything. But even with like that knowledge, there's ways to make this match good. Drew and Goldberg had the perfect match earlier this year that showcased both talents with the right ending. Like, I think that match was, I thought that match was awesome, like when I saw it. I think I watched it back one more time and I still had the same opinion. But I thought that match was awesome. They beat the shit out of each other. Drew got the clean win. No bullshit. No horse shit. At the end, they had a show of respect or whatever. And that was it. Goldberg should have been done after that. He should just rode off into the sunset after that match. But no. He's still under contract. So he's still got to get, you know, he's still got to be trotted out there. And when you overdo things, you get shit like this. So this was the complete opposite of the Drew match. It was fucking clown shoes. Absolute fucking clown shoes. Bobby Lashley defeats Goldberg via ref stoppage to retain the title. 1 out of 5 stars. And finally, thankfully, we come to the main event. Universal Championship match. Roman Reigns champion versus John Cena. After their entrances, Cena went for a quick roll-up for a 2 count, playing off of his whole 1-2-3 gimmick that he's been pumping the last couple weeks. He immediately started taunting Roman Reigns by reminding him he only needed a 3 count. Cena then rolled up Reigns again with a small package for another 2 count. And then, tired of his bullshit, Reigns repeatedly dropped Cena with some big strikes before Cena rolled him up again for another near fall. Reigns continued his methodical beatdown before throwing Cena from the ring, where he whipped Cena into the ring steps. Cena's offense primarily remained attempts to catch Reigns off guard and roll him up, even on the outside, for whatever reason. With the outside attempt to hit an attitude adjustment that led to Reigns hitting a DDT. Reigns caught Cena in a sleeper hold, dragging him to the canvas as he wrenched the hold. Cena managed to fight back, breaking the hold, but only to set up his 5-knuckle shuffle, only to be pulled into a guillotine and hit with a Superman punch from Roman. Cena was eventually able to hit the 5-knuckle shuffle and an AA for a near fall. Cena then locked Reigns in the STF, but the champion was able to get to the ropes and break the hold. With Reigns again on the attack, Cena countered a spear outside the ring by putting Reigns through the announce table with yet another attitude adjustment, dragging Reigns back into the ring to score yet another near fall. This match got really good. Like, right before that table spot, it started picking up. After the table spot, everybody was into this match. It's pretty good. Cena went for yet another attitude adjustment, but Reigns countered and hit the Superman punch for his own 2 count. Reigns missed a spear, hitting the ring post before Cena took him to the corner, hitting another attitude adjustment from the second rope, but Reigns kicked out of that. After a back and forth exchange of punches, Reigns hit 2 Superman punches and a spear to finally score the pinfall and retain his title. Pretty solid match. It started off a little slow, but again, it flipped to chaos and near falls like pretty quickly. And the crowd was super into this match. They were super into the near falls. A lot of people thought... See, so it was like kind of like 50-50, I would say, with people who thought that Cena was going to win or Reigns was going to win or whatever. I knew that Reigns was going to win when he said that if he loses, he's leaving WWE. That right there was like a dead giveaway that he was winning this match. Because... what could they possibly do with that angle if Roman Reigns loses? He's just going to not be on TV. And then what? Their biggest star you've had all year is just going to go away? I don't think so. They weren't going to do that. So once he said that, I was it pretty much solidified for me that Reigns was winning. But still, some of those near falls did get me. That top rope AA got me. Like, I was like, oh my God, they're going to actually fucking do this. And it was a two count. So I was pretty entertained. I give this match 5 out of 5. It was, as far as entertainment goes, I was pretty entertained. So, yeah, pretty good match. It was solid. And Cena had to acknowledge the tribal chief. What else can you say? So as Roman was standing victorious over his opponent. As Roman stood victorious over his opponent, a wild Brock Lesnar appears. Now, why would you do that, Echo? Don't interrupt my show. Brock's music hit and everyone lost their fucking mind. Brock Lesnar came out looking like Goro from Mortal Kombat with this weird ponytail situation he's got going on. It's like a tied up one dread ponytail thing up there. He's got his beard. He actually looked like he, what was funny is that he looked like he just got off the plane. Like, he looked like he was maybe on a plane with a jacket on, and he just took his jacket off, and he had on like a black tank top and jeans and shoes. He looked like he was going to a Getty and shit. It's pretty funny. So he comes out, the music hits, everybody goes crazy. He makes his way to the ring and stares down Reigns. They start talking shit to each other. They're nodding at each other back and forth, kind of grinning and jaw jacking. And then Reigns decides to duck out of the ring as he was urged by Paul Heyman, who looked like he was going to have a fucking heart attack. Reigns held up his title and walked up the entrance ramp. Lesnar was posing in the ring, and that was the show. No combat between the two, no physicality, just some jaw jacking, some teasing, and then they ended the show. So apparently after the show, Lesnar ended up destroying John Cena's carcass for a few minutes, much to the delight of the crowd. So overall, like, I guess this show, I would have to give it, I mean, I would give this show a 3 out of 5, just because I very much enjoyed the Damian Priest match, the Edge match, the main event was great, and the women's match was very good. So, I mean, if I really enjoyed the 4 matches out of 10, you know, I'm not going to give it a 1. You know, I did get some enjoyment out of this thing. And if you cut aside all the comedy bullshit that they played in between, you know, it's a 3 out of 5. It's in the middle. It's not the worst thing I've ever seen. It's not the worst SummerSlam ever. But it's definitely not the best. Yeah, it's just, you know, I can't give it anything higher than that. It's just 10 matches and you know, this is not a good percentage. So again, this is supposed to be a flagship pay-per-view. They're supposed to pull all the stops out. And with all the, you know, hype surrounding CM Punk this weekend, you think WWE would have tried to kind of, you know, put out a better product. But again, it's just, let's make Bianca look like shit. Let's have Miz and Morrison out there getting sprayed with dipsticks. I don't know. So, again, the biggest thing for me in this pay-per-view was the whole Sasha, Becky, Bianca clusterfuck. I mean, you know, again, I wanted to play Booker a little bit for that segment. So let's say you have this match you're promoting. And let's just use COVID. Let's say Sasha Banks tested positive for COVID, okay? So that's why they pulled her from the house show. Then the next week, they pulled her from another house show. then it's like, okay, we're having problems here. We don't think she's gonna be able to do the SummerSlam match. Okay, so let's build something else up. Why not, instead of having Carmella out there, who you squashed on the night before, like, instead of having, you know, you have Bianca go out there with her music, then you make the announcement. First of all, they should have made the announcement on the pre-show, at the very least, if not on the SmackDown before. If they would have just done this on Friday, they could have quickly built something else up. Instead, they try to fake the funk and take this shit all the way up until 30 seconds before the match. So, if you wanted to cut it close, at least on the pre-show, make this announcement. But whatever. You have Bianca come out first. Everybody's going to be wondering, why is she coming out first? Then when she hits the ring, you say, Sasha Banks will be unable to compete tonight as she's not medically cleared. But her opponent is... And then you say nothing. Play Toni Storm's music. Why not have Toni Storm come out and challenge Bianca? Toni Storm is a star. She came out for 1 week. She was super receptive by the fans. And she hasn't been on TV in like 2 weeks. The fact that they can't figure out what to do with Toni Storm is very fucking telling. Why not have Toni Storm come out, challenge Belair? They have a nice good 10 minutes. Bianca can retain. That's not going to hurt Toni. It's going to make Bianca look good. It's going to get the crowd happy. It's going to build a new star. And then when the match is over, here's Becky Lynch. She comes to the ring. The crowd goes crazy. She grabs the mic. She makes a challenge for the next pay-per-view. Bam! The shit writes itself. Why not just do something like that? I came up with that in 5 minutes. And it's much better than what they did. But no, they'd rather shit on Bianca, put the belt on Becky, with no match, because why? So now you have the belt on Becky Lynch, who may or may not be able to wrestle right now. So now you have the belt on a person who can't wrestle. I mean, I know Becky can wrestle, but is she ready to have 10, 15 minute matches right now? I don't know. Is she? Who knows? We haven't seen her wrestle in a fucking year. So you're going to put the belt on her now, so she has to wrestle. And it's like, now the news is coming out that she's going to be a heel. So you get your huge babyface pop for one of your most over acts, and now she's going to be a heel. Of course she is. And you know why? Do you know why Bianca's going to be getting drugged down into the lower card? Because WWE hates their fucking fans. That's why. They want you to boo Becky now. The most over person they have in their company. I mean, I would, by far, she's probably the most over face they have on both shows, on all their shows. And now they're going to make her a bad guy. It's fucking shameful. It really is. And it's very sad that this company continues to do these things. And the fact that people will continue to defend it and come up with excuses is total horseshit. I can't do it. I am not going to bash them unnecessarily. I try not to do that. I try to like the things I like and not like the things I don't like. And I do that for everything that I watch. I try not to simp for any company because at the end of the day, they don't care. So I enjoy what I enjoy, and what I don't, I vocalize. But some of you out there who just defend either one of these companies and don't call out their bullshit, shame on you. Definitely shame on you. And big time shame on you if you're doing it for WWE, because those fuckers, they just do whatever they feel like. They don't listen. And they don't care. So that is my SummerSlam recap. I would like to thank you very much for taking your time out of your day to listen to this. If you enjoyed this, let me know. Shoot me a comment, like, retweet, DM me. Let me know what you thought. I will be back later on this week for another episode of the Everything Podcast. And until then, guys, be safe, be well, be loved. I'm out.